Hello and welcome to episode 69 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, aka Cookie.
And I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
This week we are also joined by Alex Boyle, who recently appeared in an episode of Ethel's Geeks.
Hello.
Alex may or may not have experienced a life-shattering, I don't know, epiphany, moment of clarity, something on this reality TV show, but that's something we'll discuss later in more grim details. But what are we discussing before that, Paul?
We are discussing... Which Paul?
Me.
Yeah. Okay, cool. The Errors of Xavi. That's the online retailer, obviously. Mm. Simon Pegg joins the Pythons for absolutely anything.
Yay!
The latest trailer for The Elder Scrolls Online Lands, showing lots of warring in Cyrodiil. Okay. So glad you helped me. And Indiana Jones 5 is set for 2016 at the earliest.
Bastards.
Okay. So that Xavi story, though. Jeez. I hate to be the person working in their warehouse.
Mm. Yeah, a bit of a cock up there, wasn't it, to be fair?
Just a tiny difference between a game pack and a game pack with a console.
I'm assuming Santa Claus came early to some people.
Yeah, for those of you who are unaware, online retailer Xavi this year, when Tearaway came out, there was a bunch of people who had ordered Tearaway, the game, for the PS Vita. And rather than getting the game, they got PS Vitas, which is quite an expensive difference when you think about it. The retailer has since, you know, like, reached out to people asking for them to send it back and
panicked and begged and threatened.
Yeah, and a lot of people, quite a few people have, but there's been a lot of people who've resisted. And the retailers recently kind of issued sort of final legal warnings saying, you know, if you don't do it, we're going to start legal proceedings against you, blah. And a lot of people were saying last week, oh, well, under distance selling laws, apparently the Xavi don't have a leg to stand on. But then the tune started to change slightly from people like the BBC, and which, actually, you know, the consumer lot, who basically said that Xavi could sue everyone and they'd probably be favoured by the court. Unless, of course, you know, everyone who was affected was able to compile their own singular defence against Xavi, which is unlikely that they'd be able to be that organised and have that kind of money.
Well, it depends, because, I mean, would it be, I think, what's referred to as a class action lawsuit, where it's
but we can't do quite the same thing as the Americans do.
That's true.
Which is why it doesn't happen perhaps as often as it could otherwise happen. Yeah. When you've got many people who are grieved. I
would imagine that Xavi wouldn't be able to sue, because in the end they're the ones that have actually made the error. They're the ones that actually sent out Vitas. It's not like, say for example, the people that didn't return them would be classed as stealing them.
Well, no, because it isn't their error. I mean, I could see where they're coming from. Obviously, they want to have the stuff returned to them. It was a honest mistake. But I think they've been a bit harsh, a little bit. Maybe they should perhaps have tried to do meet halfway or something. I don't know.
Perhaps the wording was, what they could have done, if you know, was like, give us back the Vitas and we'll give you, not obviously to the value of the Vitas, because they would be any good to them, but like, I know, like 50 quid's worth of vouchers.
We'll give you a free game because you've obviously already got a Vita, because you ordered a Vita game in the first place.
Or a free game. Something like that. But it's the fact that they haven't really offered any incentive beyond asking people to full on being good people.
About if somebody actually received the Vita, decided that they've already got one, so they're giving it to a friend, or, you know, sending it as a Christmas gift, or even sold it on eBay already. What about those people?
At this point, I will say that obviously Christmas gifts are nicely accepted by myself if you need a home for one.
You've already had a Vita, you sold yours.
I know. But hey, you never know.
So, you know, with this whole situation, is part of the whole, you know, defence of, well, I didn't know. would that
Would it actually wash?
Would that be based on, you know, not being able to tell the difference? Like if you got an expensive collector's edition of a film or a game or something in when you just ordered the standard version? Whereas this is fairly obvious, isn't it?
It is, yeah. They obviously know what
it seems to have a big thing with a screen and controls on it. That's a weird add-on.
I want to know, though, if it was human error or if something actually had gone wrong with their computer systems in order for that to actually happen. I can't imagine anyone thinking to themselves, God, you know, we're getting a lot of PS Vita orders, you know, suddenly this early before Christmas. You know, I can't imagine anyone thinking that. Unless, of course, this happened around the same time that, you know, S.H.I.E.L.D. was kind of starting to, you know, come on air and everyone was suddenly tempted by PS. Nah, I don't think it was suddenly a case of...
Are you implying that advertisement works like that?
No, yeah, I'm implying that they've got...
And that puts me off playing mine.
I'm claiming that maybe they've got an ERP or a logistics system which perhaps isn't as functional as it could be.
Or somebody's last day was that day and they just thought, let's have some fun.
Some people just want to see the world play on PS Vitas. Just saying.
It was a spy from Sony.
Trying to massage their figures.
Yeah.
You see, the difference is I think Microsoft would probably be happy if they accidentally sent out Xbox One consoles. That would be the flip side.
Well, so they could block
from what I've heard.
So they could block them.
Yeah, probably. See, you should be happy, Paul. I'm not picking on the Wii U.
I'm eternally grateful for that, yes.
I think I'm gonna, unless anyone else has got any other funny one-liners or similar, I think I'm going to move us on.
Any zabby zingers?
Oh, God. There's no need for that kind of language. Okay, so this is last week was the first time I'd actually heard anything about this. I didn't realise the Pythons were going to try and do something new.
Yay!
When Paul said that Simon Pegg brings the Pythons for absolutely anything, the film is literally called Absolutely Anything.
Yeah, I didn't realise that when you posted it on Facebook. It's like, Simon Pegg's up for absolutely anything. And I'm like, yay, let's give him round bars!
Well, I've heard he's a goer, but I hadn't heard
he's a goer.
Oh, God.
I can't help but like him. He's a big geek.
He's cool, isn't he, Simon? And I think he'll fit in well with the Pythons as well.
It does seem like an interesting match. This is going to be a comedy film directed by the Terry Jones.
The Terry Jones.
I did can't, you know.
What the pastor from Florida who tried to burn the Quran?
No, I don't believe that gentleman has any sense of comedic timing.
So yeah, which really confused me to start off with the first time I heard about him. Terry Jones has done what? Oh, right, different one.
Basically, the film's about a guy called Neil Clark, which is who Simon Pegg's going to be playing, who's a teacher who's kind of fed up with everything, I suspect. Typical British bad teacher situation. And he's kind of like given, well, not even given, he discovers one day he has magical powers.
Okay.
And when we say magical powers, they're actually powers that have been bestowed upon him by aliens. And these aliens will be voiced by Terry Jones, by the looks of things, John Cleese, Terry Gilliam, and Michael Palin. And Robin Williams is also going to be appearing as the voice for Clark's dog. So we've got Robin Williams in there as well, just in case...
Robin Williams, not Robbie Williams.
I did say Robin. I did not say Robbie.
I just love to see Simon Pegg look down at his dog and is like, I'm loving angels instead. What the fuck?
So long as it's got nothing whatsoever to do with Paul, as in the film.
Oh, right.
Not any of us.
You really didn't like that?
Is it because it's called Paul? It was just making all your conversations far too confusing whenever you discussed it.
I have to admit, I've not seen it simply because everything I've seen, all the clips, all the publicity about it, you know, just completely put me off it.
What was really annoying was when I was watching it with the family, and everybody's going, "Oh, that'd be something you do, Paul. That's something you did." Well, I remember that. Didn't do that. Honest.
I think it had a very nice analysis of fundamentalist Christianity in the South of America. You know,
that's not that hard, though, really.
Yeah. It's fantastic.
You lot is batshit. Anyway, go on.
Right. I don't have any other further details for them, other than the fact that they're starting to shoot in March. I think they're shooting over... I think it's going to be set over here, which is kind of nice. So it's looking like it's going to be a British production, which has got... You know, it just happens to have Robin Williams in it. Mind you, isn't Terry Jones... Which of them's American?
Terry Gilliam.
Terry Gilliam's American, yeah.
Yeah.
I can never...
Well, you've got such a brilliantly English cast. It would be a bit weird for it not to be over here.
Yeah.
Definitely. Great setup.
Yeah. I'm also wondering if there's going to be some form of love interest. Because no female casting's been announced yet. So...
That'd be interesting.
None at all. But that was probably the coolest bit of film news to come out last week. It wasn't any more further descriptions or guessing about superhero movies. That was pretty much the coolest film news.
I'm quite looking forward to it.
I am cautiously happy.
Yes.
Well, I can't remember. What was that? Oh, is that dance film with Nick Frost out yet?
Pardon?
Hey.
Oh.
What?
The what? Tango... The, is it... Tango Fever, no.
Quick, someone get on Google.
Oh, to connect.
I feel like I've just dropped into an alternate dimension.
Yeah, Nick Frost is in. It's either come out or it's coming out. Has it come out?
I haven't seen anything.
No.
I've seen a trailer for it. I don't think anyone knows. I don't think he's out yet. But basically he's...
Are you sure this... This is actually real.
This is a real film. I read about it in a magazine, and then like MSN had somehow managed to get like the trailer exclusively. Oh god! Okay,
if Microsoft MSN have got the trailer exclusively, does it really?
You could search. Easy for you to search, Paul. Go on.
Oh no! What?
Go.
Do research.
Yeah, go research. Quickly find out what
Nick Frost
is
dancing.
Nick Frost dancing.
Nick Frost.
So, and meanwhile, maybe we should say
Cuban Fury.
Yes, that's
it.
Oh
my word!
Thank you, Paul.
Yeah.
I ain't watching it then. Sorry.
That's what comedy.
That just the titles just put me off that totally.
That's the next comedic filmic cinematic outing that Nick Frost is going to be making, Cuban Fury.
Because there's been a couple of things where Nick Frost has been involved in film projects that Simon Pegg hasn't, but
including Attack the Block.
Yes, I think on the whole they're not as good or not as well received as when it's with Pegg as well. But I may be, you know, jumping the gun there.
Meanwhile,
I like him, but he's awesome. Yeah, but. Yeah,
I kind of liked the look of Cuban Fury. Mind you, I did read like an entire like magazine article about how he'd managed to like, I can't remember if he did in like his ankle at one point, where there's this particularly furious dance scene on the roof of a car park, as you
do. What? Bloody hell, didn't he have stunt double?
No, he did. He's done a lot of the dancing himself, apparently.
Oh, well, kudos to him then.
Yeah,
no, that's cool.
So.
Still not very interested in it, though, so...
Actually, this is a good point to ask, though, because obviously this is... We were starting to talk about Python film, essentially. Favourite Python films?
Ooh. Oh.
We have a nice to say knee!
Knee! Holy Grail.
I think I'm most familiar with Life of Brian.
Brian! Get to your room!
He's not the Messiah, he's a very naughty boy!
I was most disappointed watching Legion on Sunday, which is a weird apocalypse messiah film thing, and there was no Life of Brian jokes. I was like, I know you're Americans, like, come on. That you know, it's like the Messiah was about to be born, and somebody should have said he's not the Messiah, you know.
So no, you're all individuals. Yes, we're all individuals. I'm not. I best shut up now, otherwise I could just quote them.
Okay.
You know your Python.
And the TV series and the German special.
I'll rephrase
that. Oh, the German special. The parrot sketch.
Albrecht Dürer.
Lovely. I'm gonna move us on to some more gaming
Probably boys.
So a trailer for Elder Scrolls Online landed last week. And it was basically like there was lots of fighting.
I don't know about anyone else here, but I play the Elder Scrolls games for all the fighting, not the massive world and the lore and the searching and the loot and the dungeons and storyline. Nothing like that. It's the fighting.
I thought most people that I saw complaining about it were complaining about the fact that, oh, the graphics don't look, you know, so good. Oh, it looks like it's stuttering and all this other stuff. And I was like, I don't give a damn about the graphics. I'm more worried about whether or not it's something I'd want to play based on how it plays.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be how it plays. But, I mean, I quite like the look of the actual landscape and that.
Yeah, the landscape and everything looks fine. I just don't want to, like, every 5 minutes I've suddenly walked into some kind of friggin' battle and crap's going down. And all I wanted to do was pick some mushrooms, you know?
Oh, weren't they going on about PvP as well?
Oh, gosh.
Were they?
I think there might have been, but if there is...
player versus player, and it's, oh, Jesus Christ.
I challenge thee to a duel.
I thought part of the point of, like, Elder Scrolls game is that you are kind of a legendary kind of figure that has been born, and, you know...
Except now there's going to be thousands of legendary figures who have just
all out for your blood.
Yeah, and just,
I haven't heard anything about what kind of crafting system may or may not be involved. I'd like to think that you could get through a huge chunk of the game by actually being somebody who becomes a superior, like, weaponsmith.
I want to rule the world by building a house and making cheese.
Exactly.
I actually quite like the look of the guy with the dragon rings, though, at the end. That looked quite cool.
Mm. I'd say at the Eurogamer Expo, they had a whole stand there.
Hmm.
You know, a row of at least four PCs running this. You know, big logo, 3D logo hanging from the ceiling, everything like that. It was a little bit barren. It was not a busy location. Mm. And it wasn't out in the middle of nowhere, like, you know, some of the stands were, where you had to wander around for ages going round and round in a circle before you worked out where the hell they were. These were fairly central, and it was a little bit... Yeah.
Well,
people were playing it, but you didn't have to wait.
Well, when I was intensely studying the video last week for this trailer, and, you know, looking at everything, I was having flashbacks to where... Because basically half of the equipment that everyone was wearing and or using had either been in, like, Oblivion or Skyrim.
Yeah.
So they've definitely reused and all sort of, like, maybe improved on previous models for things. Mm. So, like, obviously things like your glass armor and weapons are back and yada yada. But it does make me wonder, like, because what the kind of characters you'll be able to create actually going to be. Because obviously, Paul's saying about the whole, oh, aren't you some person of legend? Well, actually, it's not necessarily that you're someone of legend, it's that you tend to come from humble beginnings. You're a prisoner who's probably about to die or spend the rest of their life rotting away or something. And you get pulled into a fantastical scenario either by chance or fate. Certainly fate in the case of Morrowind.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're either transported somewhere, Patrick Stewart just happens to make it so through your prison cell, or a dragon happens to interrupt.
Oh, yeah. Or, you know, obviously in the case of Morrowind, it was like, you're on a boat. You're getting off the boat. Here. I don't know why you've been told to be, you know, released into this foreign land and cause all manner of havoc, but here we go. Go.
Here's a ticket. Go take a ride on the back of a giant fleet.
Oh, but you can check out the nearby cave to deal with the local bandits first.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, there's blimmin' bandits, eh?
God, the bandits.
Has anybody always else bandits. Seen the Skyrim mod with Thomas the Tank Engine replacing all of the
bandits? That was cool. Sorry, I quite liked that. That was quite amusing.
There was a fantastic video. Someone popped it up in the Eurogamer comments. Where you know the whole thing with the roars were replaced with the toot toot.
Yeah. Yeah.
As soon as Thomas settles on top of that keep.
Yeah.
The Thomas the Tank Engine theme music starts playing. So it's completely incongruous with the rest of everyone's running around and there's hellfire raining and people dying everywhere and do 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 do.
Awesome.
I'm not trying to say that I don't want to play The Elder Scrolls Online. Based on one trailer, I may have signed up for beta access. You know, just thinking, maybe I've got something that can run it. Maybe.
Have you?
I don't know.
I'm pretty
Or is it that poor? You're suddenly going to be like without a laptop if I did get onto the beta.
You're going to be using my laptop for that. My beautiful laptop.
You see, that's really what your multimedia machine was made for, was playing, you know, The Elder Scrolls Online rather than editing videos.
Editing videos, you know, playing my own Steam games, you know, running Creative Cloud, you know, stuff like that.
Oh, have you hit the subscription, once it's actually, you know, properly out there, the subscription's like, I think $15 a month?
Something like that, and yeah. Good luck with that. I'll give you about 6 months before you have to go free to play.
What's WoW at the moment?
I think that isn't that something about $10 or something?
Isn't it now free to play up to a certain level, though?
Yeah, well,
up to a certain level,
level
is,
20
yeah.
or something like that. But Eve's still paid. Yeah. But that's, I think that's more like £9 a month.
I mean, the thing is, though, is that, you know, certain franchises like WoW, they've always been online, so that kind of makes sense. Well, to a certain extent, anyway. Elder Scrolls, you're basically bringing an audience that is used to adventuring by themselves into the online world, and I don't think they get that it's not necessarily the same kind of players that play both.
Yeah, adventuring in the world and becoming progressively more important in that world as the story progresses. Mm. How are you going to do that when you've got thousands of players?
Yeah.
I don't think you can unless, because we talked about this before and I suggested some weird kind of island system.
Because you're going to be all fighting for the ring, yeah. The one ring that rules them all.
And yeah, I just
could
don't get
how if they fast travel to to thingy Matt was it Mount Doom or something in Lord of the Rings, how short the films would be.
In fairness,
that's a whole different debate.
In fairness, I think the most abusive fast travel system was the one in Oblivion, because you basically, even without visiting the main cities and towns, you could just click on them on your map and just go there. Whereas in Skyrim, you did to have at least visited them first to fast travel. So you either had to bother with a horse and cart or walk there first.
You know, briefly going back to Lord of the Rings here, just because it always annoys me. You know, Wizardy Boy can, you know, Gandalf can command those giant eagles.
Yeah.
Yep.
Why didn't he do that at the start to drop the ring into Mount Doom?
Well, that's
with if you remember the How It Should Have Ended, I think.
Video, yeah.
That was pretty much that.
Yeah, and it you know, all these kinds of things, you're like, why not just email the plans to the Death Star? To the rebels instead of sneaking it out on a bloody droid. You know, all of those kinds of things. But yeah, with MMOs, I've said before, I've tried out other MMOs. I'm not a WoW fan anyway, so I'm probably the wrong demographic for this. But I've tried Star Trek Online. I am a big Star Trek geek. Did not click. I tried Star Wars Old Republic. You know, big fan of the, you know, BioWare RPGs. And of Star Wars, did not click. I am not hopeful of this. I am a big Elder Scrolls fan, but I don't, you know, I just, or, as I've already said, I think it's going to be incompatible with why I enjoy the Elder Scrolls games. I don't want some tit jumping up and down, repeatedly hitting a rat over the head just so he can level up and, you know, make a coat for himself. All the kind of, you know, low-level crap that you always get.
I'm hoping nobody can skin rats, because I really don't want people walking around in rat fur cloaks. Just saying. Or skeevers, or whatever they decide to have.
Yeah. But, yeah, you know the kind of thing, you know, yeah. Rat flail. Level one weapon. The thing that always gets me is someone in a boardroom somewhere says, oh, WoW is making a lot of money. That means there's a market for MMOs. That means there's a market for World of Warcraft.
Mm.
I'm far from, you know, from convinced that there's actually a market for MMOs.
I think
there's one or two that can survive.
We need to mention Final Fantasy XIV, A Realm Reborn.
Well, A Realm, please God play us.
Well, you say that, but I've heard mostly positive things about it, and they looks like they're positive. Retaining subscribers. Which,
yeah, but how many in comparison?
I think they've got more than when they were at their lowest ebb with the previous version of it. You know, because
so
that was
they're doing better than their lowest point.
Yeah.
Well then,
it's obviously worked. You know, they haven't gone worse as far as I can tell. Which is always a good thing. Apparently, they sorted out a lot of stuff. Like it is more like an older Final Fantasy game rather than, you know, 13.
Can I just say that I'm actually slightly disgusted at the fact that Final Fantasy 7 and 8 have been relaunched, where you can actually pay to level up.
You can do what?
If you buy the current PC versions of either Final Fantasy VII or Final Fantasy VIII, you can pay money to not have to do all that grinding.
Well, what's the bloody point of buying the game then?
Well,
exactly. If you do that, you should get an achievement that just says, stupid twat. And everyone can see. You say, I'm level 70. Oh, are you? Let's check your achievement. Oh, you've got the stupid twat achievement.
In like 8, there's like a certain point where you don't really want to level people up. Like, it's usually around the time that you start getting like third level magic, and then it's like, no, there is no point in going beyond level, I think, 20 or 30 when it starts appearing, and it's like, you don't want to be hard.
Final Fantasy VIII had an interesting way of making sure that when you, you know, redo like areas, or when you go back to areas that you've done, that the monsters aren't like so weak that it's actually just wasting your time. You know, because the monsters level up with you, which is you know, quite cool if you think about it.
Actually, that's the thing. I can never tell with the, because obviously like the regular Elder Scrolls games, you've got the difficulty settings that you do, which are quite customizable and can be sorted out at any time. There's no way they could really do that with the online game. Oh god, Elder Scrolls monsters without the ability to tame them down a bit when it does prove that they're just insane.
Wouldn't that be a bit like Dark Souls wandering out into the wrong areas?
Yeah. Like, there's like, so like playing Skyrim, there's like some of the like the ancient dragons.
Yeah.
They're not fun if you put it on, like, even medium difficulty. They're not fun at all. They defy the definition of fun. They'd laugh.
And those, was it dragon priests?
Yeah.
If you encounter those at the wrong time, and how long ago did I save? While running around frantically.
And dodging, usually, magic.
Yes.
Dodging lots of magic. I'm gonna move us on to. Okay, I can't quite make the link as stylishly as I'd like to.
Well, we can see. But there's the theme tune.
No. There's one thing that Skyrim reminded me of a lot: the Indiana Jones films.
Hey.
Okay, I think you're gonna have to explain that one.
All the caves.
The caves.
All the caves and the ancient ruins and stuff. Everything.
Ah, fair enough.
Did you have to kind of run away from a boulder?
No, but I can't remember. I couldn't find in Skyrim whether or not there was an Indiana Jones reference, because there's an Indiana Jones reference in, I think, Morrowind and or Oblivion, but I haven't found one in Skyrim, like in one of those two, the previous two games, there is a skeleton crushed under a boulder. There's a fedora and a hint of a note that suggests that it was somebody called Indy.
I'm sure there must be a trap somewhere that's, you know, similar.
Yeah, that's, it's an Easter egg in the games. But anyway, yeah, Indiana Jones, though, we are talking about it for a reason. And that's because the distribution situation, which Paramount was in control of, has now reverted to Disney because obviously they went
and bought Lucas
film, you know. And
I wonder if J.J. Lensflare can get hold of it.
Was it watching... Oh, which Mission Impossible film did he direct? Was it three? So, yeah. Like, I managed to watch all the Mission Impossible films over the weekend, and as such, it was interesting seeing the different directive styles kind of being used. Like, with Abrams, he is not just the Lensflare, he's got a thing about the colour of the film. Like, he'll either emphasise, like, a particular hue, or he'll suck out, like, a particular hue from the footage. So it, like, intensifies the colours and stuff, like, in a particular way.
So long as it's not Michael Bay with orange and teal.
It's called colour grading.
It's colour grading. I don't know the... I don't do in-depth... I write stuff. I don't go in for all that in-depth filmy stuff.
It's fine. It's a thing.
Anyway, the earliest that Indiana Jones 5 could come out is 2016, which
can't they move it to 2099 when I might not be here?
Apparently,
that'd be better for me.
How heartbroken would you be if you were still alive at 2099 and you're like, can you just move it to 2199 instead?
You only say 2099 because there are loads of comic books and such that were saying 2099.
No, it wasn't. Honest. It was the first year that jumped to my head. Oh, I don't know.
Spider-Man 2099.
I think nothing in all honesty, we should perhaps be realistic at this point. They say 2016 could be the earliest. The thing is, though, according to an interview that Variety did with Alan Horn, who is Walt Disney Studios chairman, he said that they currently don't have a story. So they have nothing to actually...
They didn't stop Crystal Skull.
But they basically... They have nobody's like seriously on a script at the moment, or they haven't got a serious concept at the moment.
Does that mean for that bloody the boof plonk is coming back?
Oh, fucking hell.
No, because there was the slight hint that they could even be rebooted. But in terms of the bad guys...
No. There will be no rebooting of Indiana Jones.
Stop. Think about this, Disney. Do not do it.
It was just the faint whiff of it could be rebooted. Just the faintest of whiffs.
This is Disney we're talking
about. I think there's only one way that you could anger Retroid more, and that's if Jar Jar Binks was starring alongside Indy.
I thought it was Cookie that was most offended at this point. Jesus. But everyone's offended.
No. You might as well just put bloody well put the Disney princesses in it as well. Fucking hell. Hello, Mickey. It's Mickey Mouse. Yay. Indiana Jones as well. Okay. Oh my god.
Even if they.
Get a set for the treasure of Pluto! Oh,
no. Even if they did continue with the continuity that they've got, there's one thing they probably won't be doing, and that's making any bad guys Chinese by the sounds of it, because apparently Walt Disney, again, very serious about the Chinese market, which, if World War Z is anything to go by, means you cannot have Chinese people or China, the People's Republic of China, as a bad negative force in the film.
If only they would have felt that way about Britain in the 80s and 90s, like with, you know, the British people being like bad guys and stuff.
To be fair, though, Alan Rickman just played like, was it a German or
It was in multiple films. You can't just blame one actor.
We sound better.
I mean, to be fair, Alan Rickman was a kind of bad guy in a British series of films.
I think you need to tell people which
I'm sure.
Oh, Harry Potter, of course. Duh.
There we go.
With the way Putin is going and various politics in Russia at the moment.
Do you think they'll just stick with Russia?
I'm pretty sure, yeah, that the Russians can be the bad guys again in films.
But I mean, it's kind of worrying that that kind of, kind of marketing kind of thing is kind of affecting the story in such a way that in the end, what you're basically doing is working out where most of your audience, or, you know, where a big part of your audience is, and then going, no, that they're either going to be ignored or they're going to be good.
I mean, the thing...
can't be bad. And it's like, really?
The reason for China more is the fact that they heavily control their film market. Like, they only
allow certain numbers of films.
Yeah, so you don't want to piss off their censors if you're trying to be allowed distribution in the country.
Yes. But so it's not as if we can't have a Chinese baddie because it might turn off Chinese audiences. It's if we have a Chinese baddie, it won't get released in a country with a population of over a billion.
But then that raises a problem of if they're that concerned about getting into China, then how many films are actually going to start going, no, it's not enough that we don't have Chinese as bad guy. We have to have them as a good guy. Because there's going to be that competition to get into China.
It makes me wonder. It could also cause other problems. Like, say, if China doesn't make it into them at all in, like, any representation, but then you've got positive representations of people who aren't quite allies, you know, like, half enemies as it is now, like, obviously South Korea or Japan. I mean, that whole airspace thing at the moment kind of shows that. Well, I mean, obviously things weren't happy because of previous shenanigans during the 20th century. And calling them shenanigans is being really polite.
It's being extraordinarily polite.
Yeah.
I think, to be fair, going back to...
The whole final shenanigan.
Yeah, the whole final shenanigan. There's just too much of this whole let's reboot and expand universes and everything else going on at the moment for my liking.
That's just because it's the safer option compared to an online text.
And that is aimed at you, Sony Pictures, as well. Sony Pictures, that is aimed to you. A fucking Sinister Six movie. What the hell?
What, just a movie about bad guys?
What's the point? The Sinister Six was there to destroy Spider-Man. That was the whole point of them being formed up. Hello?
Right, which is... Because I know there was a, like... Was it Sinister Group or something like that? That was against... In the X-Men cartoon series. Was that part of it?
No, they're not this Sinister Six, no. Just from the Spider-Man universe.
The Irksome 11.
Which is kind of weird if you think about it, because we've kind of approached this topic of, like, so many superheroes being in the space of New York, and it's kind of weird that, you know, there's not, like, more, crossover, like, with bad guys and good guys, and it's like, how many characters in the Marvel Universe are actually within the New York City area, or, you know, basically just around New York? Because there's quite a few.
There is quite a lot, to be fair.
Can I sort of claw this back towards Indiana Jones 5?
No.
How are you going to do that?
I don't know.
It has to be relevant.
There's no word as to whether or not they could actually even get original stars in at the moment.
No, put the plot in a fridge. And nuke it.
No, is that with a ground to... Yeah, I suppose just a regular nuke sort of bomb that isn't in a missile, with a missile, or nuke from orbit.
It's the only way to be sure.
It's the only way to be sure.
Nuke from orbit.
So I wonder if the Indiana Jones series is going to turn out like American Pie, where they have to keep one character in it to keep the name. So every future Indiana Jones is going to have
who is it? Is it Levy?
A grumpy
Eugene
whip
Levy,
possibly.
Who keeps appearing in all the American Pie.
Yeah,
films.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so Indiana Jones is going to get Harrison Ford just getting older and older as all the new stars come in, and he's going to just pop up for one line.
No.
A bit like in Star Wars, Star Trek, as well.
Whoever the new star is, pops in to see Uncle Indy in the rest home.
Exactly.
Somebody turns around to him and is like, "You should be in a museum." He just looks at him sternly.
Oh,
I am.
I would kind of hope that Harrison Ford would be in it. But, I mean, he's meant to be making, obviously, brief appearances and whatever the hell's happening with Star Wars. Not that they've got a properly sort of, like, put, you know, they haven't got a script properly finalised for that.
And he's going to be in The Expendables, isn't he?
Again, yeah. Having a script didn't stop 1, 2 and 3.
What, of Expendables?
No. Star Wars.
A good point.
There's not a third Expendables film yet,
Yeah.
There is. Is it being made at the moment, or is it?
It's being made, I think.
It's being made. Okay,
but it's not out.
No.
Okay, cool.
No, I was worried.
I've not seen any of them.
I'm kind of intrigued by, you know, kind of an old genre that has had its kind of heyday and kind of all the stars kind of coming back for this one big, you know, thing, and it's like, it's kind of interesting, but by the same token, the concept is maybe a little bit like,
It's worth watching if it's on TV.
As long as you don't have to pay for it. Wow. It's cool.
You know, I'm now wondering which, because obviously
it's not worth shooting your television for.
I'm wondering if they obviously do Indiana Jones 5 and they're looking for a story, and obviously they know they can't get away with interdimensional aliens again.
For a second there, I thought you was going to say, if they're looking for a story and need a writer, I'm available.
Well, actually, I am available, now that you mention it, but I doubt they'd hire me.
They should just hire us, and we can just say, not that.
Not that.
Not that, no. We've got, no, not that, no. Put that down.
We haven't even seen it yet.
Not that.
I'm just wondering, because, okay, so they can't do interdimensional visitors again, so they'll have to do something that's a religious artifact, but then it's like, well, which religious and or mythological artifact could something they Islamic. Do
there you go
could be something to do with Dante's Inferno, I suppose, you know, just as a thought.
I've
out
just
there.
Got this image of like a brilliant bit for like the trailer of 5 would be basically Shia LaBeouf and Harrison Ford, you know, standing there as the Millennium Falcon kind of crashes into the earth, almost like
Maybe they could just steal from they could just kind of go with Constantine and do the whole thing with the spear that pierced Christ whilst he was being crucified.
Yeah.
You know, because
that would kind of fit in with
because the Nazis cut. Apparently got hold of that. Well, what if, you know, the unbelieving, you know, communist Russians got hold of that as well, and they were like, some of us are unbelieving, but actually, and they tried to use it.
They could also
shoot
find
all those Russians in as bad guys there.
You got to, apparently.
It's the law.
They could also do one where they find the lost, you know, footage of Steam Willy, Mickey Mouse's first appearance. Okay.
Hold on, this is copyright free now.
I have said there was one thing that kind of like I think was a missed opportunity with them being in South America in Crystal Skull, because obviously where Nazi officials went on the run after World War II, you know, during the Nuremberg trials and everything, it was like South America. They could have fitted in, you know, Nazis undercover somewhere.
Actually, it will work thinking there, because, you know, the whole thing with them saying, oh, we went with aliens because it was the 50s for Crystal Skull. Well, with the 60s, it's paranoia about communism.
Yeah.
So there you go. You can have a very poorly...
Yeah, time it, because obviously the treatment that Indy gets near the beginning
of
the
film. I'm not a communist, but I want stuff to be on show so that everybody can see it.
Yeah, that was just sort of setting in at that point, you know, the whole communism thing. But yeah, the 60s were just, oh, Europe, you'd have gone batshit. There you go, Kennedy. Indy accidentally assassinates the president.
I thought it was going to be Magneto that assassinated the president.
Shh.
It was conspiracy theory time.
Really, it was Dr. Jones. Brilliant. That's crossover territory, I don't think.
Somewhere there's a fanfic being furiously fapped out.
It's going to be a bit like Doctor Who crosses over with Star Trek Next Generation again, isn't it?
Oh, Jesus.
I think I need to move us on to our final piece for the night, which is where we will talk to Alex about stuff. Actually, specifically about his existence as a geek, apparently.
His existence?
As a geek.
You'd forgot about this, hadn't you?
Yeah, and appearing on a TV show titled Geeks, you know. So basically, Alex was
they were with that title.
Alex was recently in an episode of V4's Geeks, which is a reality television show that sees people who are self-confessed geeks. I'm not sure if people in these groups actually called themselves geeks, really, you know, before appearing on this.
They kind of had to. They egged us on with that.
and that these poor people are taken to party destinations like Ibiza or Malia, which is where Alex ended up. And his episode was on, let's see, if you're listening to this week, last week. Right. So it should still be on 4OD.
It is on 4OD because that's where I watched.
Yeah.
I think they're on, they should go after a week usually, but I think they might all be on the whole series until a week after the final episode, possibly. But I mean, it's still on there now, so it should be on when this goes out. And so if you haven't watched it, see it, because it's...
Yeah,
it's an experience, I'd say.
Because it's a thing.
Yeah, it's a show, you know. And,
obviously, Alex, you were on the... Your episode was... It was a brass band members with cosplayers.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, so cosplayers, obviously, you know, you could potentially, if you weren't being particularly kind, call them geeks. Brass banders... Yeah, I can see they're trying to sort of, they're fishing for ideas a bit there, getting a bit sort of low, scraping the barrel. But you could equally classify us just as musicians, really.
Yeah.
But, you know, the whole premise that they sort of sold it to us with was we're looking for a group of four people who share a hobby. So, you know, we share a hobby of brass banding.
Yeah, sharing a hobby sounds a bit better than geeks.
Well, exactly. Yeah. And then it transpired through sort of the initial interviews and the filming that firstly they were, you know, heavily portraying us as geeks, and secondly that it might not turn out as sort of well as we hoped and as well as sort of they sold it to us in the beginning. They're all like, a whole lot of a lifetime, you know. You'll have a great time. And it wasn't all like that, unfortunately.
Well, it does seem to be you're thrown into sort of a lion's den, so to speak.
Yeah, it was. I mean, you know, none of us were strangers to... the girls that we were with, the cosplayers, there were a couple of them, it was their first times away from home. A couple of them, it was their first time in clubs. But, you know, us four guys, you know, we'd been to... We were at university, sorry. You know, we go clubbing, you know, perhaps once a week even, you know, maybe a couple of times in freshers a week. And we know we're no strangers to drinking, clubbing, socialising, all that sort of thing, that they try and make it seem like we are, you know, out of
they
our depth.
They definitely tried to do that.
Yeah. But that was purely through, you know, the edit of it, and also through them sort of controlling most aspects of what we do. We weren't... That was my main gripe with it, is that it wasn't a proper holiday. You know, on a proper holiday, you go out with your friends. Perhaps you plan a few things. You might be like, oh, okay, on Thursday, we might go to the castle, you know, and have a look around. Or, you know, and every morning you might wander down the beach whenever you get up. But it's not... They were rigorous with their planning. You know, they'd be like, okay, you've got to be outside ready in 5 minutes. And then, you know, we'd drive off to the first location, which was, say, a pool party. And then... You know, but then we'd wait outside it for half an hour while they'd sort of set up filming or like ask permission to film. And, you know, it was just ridiculous. So we were rushing around everywhere and then waiting. And that means that, you know, in each day we only got to do maybe one or two activities. And that, coupled with the fact that we, you know, didn't have a clue really what we were meant to be doing and what we were allowed to do, made us seem awkward. So, for example, at the pool party, you know, we were sort of standing around on the edge of the pool. You know, if I'd been on my own, you know, I would have just jumped in, you know, or got some drinks and stuff. And we didn't know what we were allowed to do. So we had to sort of ask a runner to ask a producer whether we could have some drinks. And then they said yes. So, you know, they bought some drinks. But, and then we had to ask if we were allowed to go in the pool and we had to take our microphones off. And, you know, it was also so much hassle. And there was so little freedom. And it just, you know, that was...
They would have been better off doing a... Just stick a camera or two somewhere and let you go off and do your own thing.
To be honest, yeah, stick like a few cameras somewhere, you know, give everyone a camera and then, you know, go and do something.
Well, it sounds like it could have been done better as a mockumentary, possibly.
Yeah. Anything really.
Right, no. I mean,
it wasn't that bad, but
you said earlier that obviously you like the whole brass band thing. You think of it as a hobby.
Yeah.
Obviously, though, music's quite a big part of that. I mean, have you got any grades in playing the tuba?
Yeah. Yes. No. Yeah. Of course. I'm grade. Grade 8.
Brilliant.
But not that, I mean, I'm not having to press around, but no, my degree was in music as well, and I'm hopefully joining the army as a musician. So music is, is a big part of my life, but it doesn't make me, it doesn't make me weird. It doesn't make me something to sort of look at on the television, or like, to make fun of, because...
What else are your passions in life?
Well, I love motorbikes. I haven't passed my sort of my full test yet, but I've got a little 125 that I enjoy sort of fixing when it breaks, which it does often, and sort of riding around and stuff. And obviously I like sort of gaming and computers, like, I build a few computers, when I can afford the parts and when I need a new computer. Of course, I love music and sort of composition. I composed a musical actually for my degree, which I was up for. Well, it was awful. I mean, I spent a week in the studio nonstop, sort of awake for most of that time, trying to get it in before the deadline. And, I managed it in the end. But So
it exists.
Yeah.
Yes. It was done in the end.
Okay, nice one. Which is something that, I mean, that's the kind of background we were not getting about people when watching.
There was absolutely none of that. It was just, these lot play brass instruments. These are in a brass band.
That common
This is their
life, really
this
annoying.
Is their existence. They are brass band players.
Oh, and then there's the cosplayers.
They go to sleep holding it.
And there's the cosplayers, which had no real explanation as to when cosplayers would tend to wear their costumes.
Yeah, I mean, can I just ask, were you kind of told to kind of... Well, presumably you're actually told to actually kind of dress in that attire kind of when you first went there.
Yeah, go out in your brass kit.
Of course, yeah. So I just covered a quick point about that. We were, they didn't show it, but we filmed some packing shots and we were told to pack sort of 3 shirts. And while we were all at Leo was one of the guys with us. We were all at his house and we were all filming as if it was our bedroom, but we filmed in sort of different rooms, sort of 3 rooms of the house. We filmed 3 of us, our shots, and then Nick filmed somewhere else. And we were all sort of told to pack our jackets or whatever and pack 3 white shirts because we didn't have enough. We were all using the same shirts, which is quite funny. Of course, I mean, and, on a real holiday with my friends, the 3 of the other guys, I wouldn't take my tuba because it was, 30 kilograms. It took a whole... luggage space. It cost about 50-60 quid to take. We wouldn't take our band jackets. That's a concert dress, that was and I don't know about the girls whether they would take cosplay, but I mean, we at least were told to wear our uniforms and car arrangement.
You see, what you really should have done is you should have really, because the producers wouldn't know what the hell, you should have really messed with their goddamn heads and got yourselves replica Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band outfits, and had those, and then obviously you would be dressed as band people, but at the same time you'd be cosplaying, and it'd just make the whole thing meta.
That would be awesome. Yeah. But see, hindsight's a wonderful thing, isn't
I know.
It?
That whole thing of, there was a shot of the 4 of you on the, the steps of the villa in the outfits, with the brass instruments. At least you didn't have to go in costume on a bus.
That's true.
Yeah.
The lasses had to. I thought that was an obvious setup.
Yeah.
But I suspect that bus was full of... They would have hired the minibus, gone to the centre of Malia, said, do you guys want to be on TV? They would have been like, got on the bus. They would have briefed them that they've got to make fun of these people who are getting the bus or something. Because... It didn't come across quite very well, but there's a sort of like a... Oh, I won't go into detail, but there's a shot where we're walking past a line of girls, and that line of girls, exactly the same thing happened. One of the producers called over some girls and said, do you want to be on TV? And they said, sure. So I think it was just for continuity, sort of. So we had, because we did that shot like 5 times walking up the strip.
Yeah.
And yeah, so those girls were, you know, probably briefed about what they had to do. And but, you know, I was trying to, because that was the first thing we did. We landed in Malia. It landed in Heraklion. I went to Malia, had a bit of thing to eat, told to change in our uniforms. And then, you know, we were packed off down the strip to film. So, you know, I was worried when I first got there. I was, all my friends have said, look, you're an idiot for doing this, because they're going to make a fool of you. So in the back of my mind, in the front of my mind, actually, there was that thought. So
when's it going to happen?
Exactly. And in fact, it happens sort of all the time. But so, you know, I was trying to make myself seem, I don't know, as I don't really, I hesitate to use the word normal, but, you know, I was trying to sort of rebel against their,
yeah,
their obvious stereotypicalization or whatever the word is of me.
Yeah.
To be honest, that did actually come across. Because, you know, there was very little footage of you actually, you know, kind of playing up, as it were.
We'll get onto the subject of playing up later, because that's a whole series of questions in of itself. But I think one thing I really, really want to know was the divisions they tried to make between the girls and your group.
Yeah.
Were they really that ingrained, or were you actually off camera, you know, when you were given the chance to chilling with each other? What was going on? Because it just seemed like you were being artificially just kind of like separated in ways that actually, if you'd been allowed to, wouldn't have happened.
Yeah. I mean, it all links together, and sort of one small part that we thought was quite small at the time. If you look at the bigger picture, you kind of see what they're up to.
Yeah.
And, you know, the thing about them having control over what we do and where we go, that was actually a massive thing. The little things that happened. So the questions they asked in the interviews, we all had individual interviews, and none of us really knew what the other people were saying. So, you know, in the edit, you sort of see that that Deandra, they obviously picked up that Deandra was annoyed with us boys for seemingly not wanting to make friends with the girls.
Yeah.
So every, it seems like every
interview they did make quite a thing of that.
Mm.
Exactly. Every interview they sort of see, and then they chose Nick as the opposite. So the one who was not annoyed with the girls, but the one who was preventing the girls or the boys being friends with the girls. And that culminated in the, you know, in sort of the scene where Nick and Deandra sort of have a chat.
Okay.
But yeah. And there were lots of things like that sort of, that sort of served to drive us both apart that we didn't realize were happening at the time. Another one was when us guys went to the music museum, or the mandolin museum, or whatever the annoying voice of a man called it, mandolinium, I can't remember.
Yeah, something it's stupid, yeah.
Mandolium, was it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Something like that.
But he, so the choice is there. Obviously on television, it seemed like we were in Leo and my bedroom, and, you know, one of us is like, oh, I've heard about this music museum, and they were like, oh, let's go there. Obviously, sort of 5 minutes before that, the producers have said, okay, you've got a choice today. So the choice they gave us was a music museum or a beach party. And we thought, well, you know, the day before we'd been to a pool party, and it was all right. But, you know, I would have gone again, but I don't think the other lads would have. So, you know, most of us decided, oh, we'll go to the museum, and then we all had to make a consensus, because they were like, you've got to stick together. There's another thing, you know, that we didn't realize at the time. So we were given the choice. We all picked the museum. We went out to breakfast and had breakfast with the girls. And they're like, okay, chat about what you're going to do today. So Nick pipes up and says, oh, we're going to go to a museum today. What are you girls doing? And then this is the first time the girls have heard of it. And, you know, the day before, the girls have been saying, oh, we'd love to spend more time with the boys and get to know them. And, yeah, you know, I think a few of the boys were saying the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as the girls found out, they were like, oh, what, you know, why are you going there? Why don't you go to the beach with us? Or, you know, why don't we go to the museum? And at that point, the producers sort of stopped filming and said to the girls, look, you can't go to the museum because and then they made up some excuse like there's only space for four people, or you know, they've only got permission, or something. I don't know, something ridiculous that
because
that
of would, reasons.
Yeah,
exactly, and that would sort of baffle the girls. So, then they sort of restarted filming and said, okay, start talking again, and this time, you know, just girls, just say where you're going, and that's what you can sort of tell. You can tell that Nick, when we restarted filming, I think is when they showed, you know, they didn't cut it from before and then after. Mm. They just showed the after, and you can see Nick is sort of like just literally just saying, rehearsing a line. You know, just saying, oh, the girls, we're going to the music museum today. What are you doing? And then the girls are saying, you know, they say, oh, we're going to the beach, and they seem. You can tell that they're really, really annoyed about it. That they, you know, the producers, because they realise as well, the producers are trying to drive us apart.
Yeah.
And sad.
It is really, isn't it? I mean, one thing I'd like to know is, are you actually told that you're going to be sharing the villa with the girls? Because every week, the lads or the girls come into the villa first of all, then the girls appear, and suddenly it's, whoa, hang on, nobody actually told us all this.
Yeah, no, that's completely true. We did not know at all about the girls.
That seems pretty harsh, to be told you're going on a holiday with three of your mates, and then you get there and suddenly it's, well, actually...
It kind of sounds unethical as well, because, I mean, presumably there would have been something in the contract about that.
I was thinking that sounds a little bit dodgy, because it goes from, here's a program about you and your three mates doing a thing because you all have this hobby, to, you're sharing it with some other people who have a different hobby.
They've only just escaped from the prison, but don't worry.
You'll be safe. And there's a knife missing.
What kind of hobby is that?
What, murder?
Escaped prisoner. Yeah, we like to escape from prison together.
Well, there's a lot of planning, so there you go.
I suppose that is kind of geeky.
Yeah, prison geeks. Yeah. So we didn't know about the girls being there, and I mean, on a very childish level, which I'm sure the production company and E4 were playing at, is that, you know, all girls together, guys together, they might get together, you know.
They do that every week, don't they?
Yeah, but you know, you were talking about, or someone was talking about the contract, and I remember a phrase comes to mind which we didn't think was sort of, you know, worrisome at the time. We signed away our moral rights. So,
your what?
So, your moral rights. It's a copyright thing. Basically, if you say, for instance, do you remember once upon a time, the BNP used
Kaiser Chiefs, I predict a riot.
Party video. The Kaiser Chiefs' objection to the use of their music in that way was based on moral rights.
It's basically if you take exception.
Mm.
Yes.
Yeah,
and so unfortunately, that's something to watch out.
It's like, no, yeah. I don't want that because things and yeah. You go, yeah, shit, tough shit, because you sign.
But we didn't realise it at the time, and in fact, but to be honest,
like you said, hindsight.
I think I was the most cautious of us four guys. The other guys, they got their contracts signed straight away, and you hardly even read them and sort of handed them back. I said, can I take my contract away? They were happy with that, and I went and saw some of my friends who had done law. I went and saw some of my other friends, you know, who just sort of friends, and you know, help me out with sort of the enormity of what I was going into. And most of them said, you know, you're an idiot. You look at this contract; it's you know, it constricts you so much, and so. But the thing is, I didn't want to let the guys down, because we'd already had one person drop out. Alistair was actually a late addition. I didn't want to let the guys down. Although, looking on the rest of the episodes in the series, it seems like there are a couple of episodes where there was only three in a group. So, you know, perhaps I could. But, yeah. I think that cautiousness sort of carried with me throughout the whole.
Yeah, because watching it, you did seem to have the least moments of talking out of all the guys.
Yeah, that was the thing. I realised that. Soon, you know, the first couple of days was sort of fine. We all got equal amounts of airtime, and I think a bit of sort of pride is going to come in here a bit. We were all vying for the most amount of airtime. So, you know, not saying he made it up, but Leo had his walking out of the bikini contest scene.
Yeah.
So that was, you know, that was mainly Leo. And then, you know, Nick and Deandra had their thing in the club where Nick was like, oh, I don't want to dance. And Deandra's like, come on, dance with us and, you know, join in. And then before that, Leo had his not going out, I'm not going out. So by sort of the second day.
And a onesie.
Oh, yeah, and a wonderful giraffe onesie, yeah. onesie. But by the end of the second day, after the music museum, I hadn't been, like, usually all of us would get interviewed. And I think they were getting tired of my interviews and me not saying much that they could use. I've got to confess here a little bit. I made a conscious decision to try and get myself on camera. So I did kind of ham up the sort of, oh, Nick's bullying me kind of story. Just so that I'd, you know, perhaps get a bit more airtime, because, you know, I felt like, you know, right still, I felt I was losing out on the show, really, and it's not something I would usually speak up about, but, you know,
it's kind of natural, especially when you work out that, you know, they're trying to do a narrative.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. And I mean. Yeah, now you say it, that it's obvious that, yeah, they were trying to sort of find out the best stories and put them in, and the stories that were, you know, most unusual or out of the ordinary to what they'd planned went in. You know, you could see that all through the episodes. So, yeah, you know, I kind of sort of hammed it up a bit. I think it paid off, I suppose.
With you saying that, though, that leads us to the most critical question that we need to ask you this evening, which is, is Nick as bad as he was made out in the episode? The public need to know.
Yes, without a doubt he was. He is. he's always like that. He's always very, well, you can watch my episode and see what I think of him, but he just, you know, the scene with that, with the clubber, the clubbing girl who, with all the face paint, that comes up to him while he's being interviewed, and he says, who wants attention? You know, look who wants attention. And he says hello
off
to her.
Off your toodle or something, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You sod.
Yeah. That's hilarious. That's funny. He's, you know, he's really harsh by doing it, but that's what he's like. You know, or that's why all his friends are friends with him, because he says stuff like that. And that's fine. And that's hilarious if you're not on the receiving end of it. And because there was only three of us, usually, you know, I presume usually he picks on someone else, or there's two, you know, there's enough of us brass banders or whoever's out in the group that he doesn't pick on me. But because there's only three of us, and you know, Alice is, you know, too nice to pick on, and Leo is sort of, you know, a bit more strong. Leo didn't come across very well, I don't think. Leo's a lot sort of stronger and forthright than he seemed on television. But yeah, but because of those two, I was the weakest, I suppose, and so he directed the most of his vitriol at me. And that unfortunate clubber that was trying to get on the shot.
They definitely decided that, yeah, it's Nick and Grandma. Who I liked. I thought he was great.
I thought he was quite cool.
It's kind of
weird
because watching this episode...
And the girls as well. You know, they decided, we're going to concentrate on, you know, Desandra. Yeah. And was it Jenny?
Kim, Hannah, Lucy.
I'm terrible with names, but yeah, it was just, you know, we're going to concentrate on Desandra, and we're going to swap between the other ones, but, you know, we've decided that, you know, these are the things we're going to do.
It's kind of weird because watching this, I've kind of created a theory about, like, the alpha nerd
or alpha geek
or the alpha geek. There's like always like the one guy that tries to be the nerdiest person in the small group and tries to control the group.
Yeah.
That's kind of been our experience in the past as well.
Yeah, so. In your face with people that we've hung out with. Ah, the joys. But I talking with you about this show, and certainly your episode, obviously, and just, it's made me despise reality television just that bit more.
Yeah.
I mean, it's bad enough, like, comparing and contrasting different versions of shows, like, say you watch Wife Swap USA versus Wife Swap here or Wife Swap Australia, and you will see that the American version, they really, really try to create a story and just ham things up and everything just to the extreme, whereas the British and the Australian ones are a bit more tamed down. And you'll get it as well with things like Undercover Boss, stuff like that as well.
Has anyone here, I know several of us are, but, you know, we're fans of Charlie Brooker.
Yes.
And things like Screen Wipe.
Yes.
He did one a while ago where he covered reality TV, and he was saying about Big Brother and the whole methods and all the methods they employ to try and get stories and narrative and, you know, form characters. All the little tricks that these things are filled with. And I was noticing one or two where it was just, you know, the way they cut shots, and a reaction shot doesn't have to be an actual reaction shot to something that's been said. Just so long as something said, they have a good reaction shot to follow it up with.
Yeah. A point in case was actually with the tea argument.
Yes.
If you haven't seen this, it's where Nick and Alistair, the main arguers, one is for putting tea in, putting milk in first.
Yes.
And the other one, Alistair's for that, and Nick is for putting tea in first and milk afterwards.
First time.
Yeah.
whereas I hate tea, but go on.
Yeah, exactly. I prefer coffee. No. But you can see, yeah, you're exactly right. They use the clip of Nick. He pulls a face, like a what are you talking about face? And they used it at least two or three times throughout that. And you know, you've got to be sort of stupid to not realise that they're doing that, you know, and not see the same shot, a couple of times in that episode.
It kind of works against you because people are so used to the, you know, the shots being constructed like that through, you know, when they've watched, you know, TV over the years. When reality is cut in the same way, people would just go,
yeah.
Well, most people will, unless you're approaching it from a, what the hell are they going to do?
Exactly. But that's a very good, very good point that people are used to seeing shot, reaction shot, you know, over the shoulder shot, you know, that they've got to do reality TV in that way, I suppose. But an interesting point about reaction shots, we do a scene, the less scripted scenes, where we're sort of sitting on opposite beds talking about what we're going to do the next day.
Yeah.
We sort of film that. The directors would maybe stop it a couple of times and say, no, look, you've got to talk about this or talk about this specifically. We've gone over that. That's sort of standard reality TV stuff where they try and get what they want out of you.
Okay.
But then they'd film things. Then they film reaction shots, and they'd say, right, we're filming a reaction shot. So, you know, Leo, look as if you're listening to Alex and Alistair talking, and then they'd swap it around and say, right, Alex, look at Leo, look as if you're listening to Nick talking. And so, so they've got all these shots. And I mean, that makes it incredibly easy to edit in sort of awkward silences, for example, and, you know, all the sort of tricks that they use, you know, because we've done that, we've got that on film, and we didn't realise at the time, we just thought it was like a standard sort of, you know, standard procedure, but they've got all these shots and of us looking, you know, we're listening, but sometimes we look a bit gormless or, you know, shocked or, you know, and...
Or if there's just a moment where one of yous looks away, sort of just glanced away, if you edit that in the right way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dismissive.
You're shy or, yeah, or, yeah. Exactly. So,
Gosh.
Does make me want to re-edit the episode.
Oh, yeah.
So sinister.
I was thinking, I mean, it would be a lot of effort, and I'm not very good at editing, but I was thinking before my episode whether I could, you know, get a copy of it and, you know, make a funny edit of it, like create some love story between... you know, me and Nick or something, and I reckon that could go, you know, you could do that quite easily because there's a lot of shots of Nick and I talking, and it just puts some cheesy music, and the voiceover guy makes it easy as well because he puts words into our mouths, really. So
just
but,
to yeah.
keep... but if one of you wants to do that, then feel free.
We are running out of time. There was one last thing I wanted to ask, because you're a brass band player, have you watched Brassed Off?
Of course I've seen Brass Belt.
Good. Just wanted to be sure.
You're a brass band player. You're part of the club. You've got to watch this now.
Exactly. Well, we actually had a social, a brass band social watching Brass Belt. So I'll say no more.
Okay. We've got time for this week. So it's goodbye from...
It's Alex Boyle. You can check me out on Twitter at AlexTubaGeek.
Forward. I'm Super Retroid on Twitter and Retroid on Eurogamer.net.
And it's good night for me, Paul, aka One Armed _ Cookie on Twitter, and you can also find me lurking around thegamejar.com.
And it's good night for me, Paul. I'm on Twitter as Paul Blewett.
And it's good night for me, Emily King. I'm on Twitter at EK6891. You also might want to check out drowninginmultimedia.co.uk. You can find Nerds Assemble over at www.nerdsassemble.co.uk. We're also available on iTunes. You can find us on Twitter at Nerds Podcast. Plus, we're also on Facebook and Google Plus as Nerds Assemble Podcast. Don't forget to go to hexdimension.com where lots of awesome stuff is happening.
Good night.